So when we come to class 2, you'll understand what the gases are all about.
Come to what?
Class 2, solid nutrition.
Planet September?
Planet. Solar nutrition, class 2?
Solar nutrition, and then the workshop on the music.
I'll be here up to Sunday. We have a class when?
Saturday.
It ends at 5 o'clock, right?
Okay. And the astrology workshop's canceled for Saturday night, so we can have a Saturday night.
Okay, we can do that Saturday night.
Okay.
And Sunday is a class 3, is that it?
Sunday is the initiation thing, initiating meeting again, so we can do it Sunday night too.
Yeah.
Are you having initiation Sunday?
No. Initiation Sunday.
So we can do musical work, speed up your process.
Okay. Sunday is already scheduled as an initiate meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So Saturday night we'll have music, and then Sunday we can continue.
And the class 2 is when? Saturday.
Yeah, the workshops, solar, are Saturday and Sunday.
All right. And then Saturday night they can do, we call it, a musical workshop with the if they want.
Yeah.
8 o'clock, maybe?
8 o'clock.
Mm.
That'll give us a break from the workshop from like 5:30, and then we come back at 8 o'clock.
You see, meditation normally is assumed to be sitting down, closing your eyes and withdrawing from the world in order to get your brain slow. That process is valid as long as you want to sit down and live in an agricultural society. How many people in this society really can sit down and slow their brain down without getting distracted? Now they gotta get up and go what? Drive a car to go home. But if you live in India or any other part of, they go sit down at the guru's feet for how long? They ain't going no place. So most of the people doing what? Sitting a sedated life because of their lifestyle. That doesn't say they're not going to feel peaceful. That doesn't say they're not going to get some insight inside of their mechanism as to what they are. I've been through that process. It's okay if I'm going to live in the East. I live in the West, where I got to get up, go face the world, and drive an automobile. I need to be able to function with the awareness on my 2 feet and take care of my responsibility, because the world doesn't end by sitting down in a corner. When you look up at the sky at night and see all that free real estate going to waste, why should I limit myself to this little planet? If the greater glory of God is to move out into space and time, then there must be a shorter cut to something much more intrinsic. And so the research was geared to find a way to cut down on sitting down to meditate, tranquilizing yourself into achieving the capabilities of the meditative process and function in the moving state. Because all meditation eventually falls into 2 categories, immobile and mobile. a mobile unified state is convex vision, where you don't move and you sit like this and you see it, but you can't get up and go a single place with it. The moment you get up, it's gone. And you can be consulted as a great oracle or a great prophet by sitting there. But I haven't seen a guru that come over from the west, from the east to the west, drive a car yet. He's being driven around by everybody. So what I'm trying to say is this. They are perfect in their own location for the people they have to cater to. Over here, we're operating entirely different. We have to be able to adapt to the different process. So the next step in unified thinking or cosmic awareness is mobility. And that is to get up and function. Now, Yogananda, when he was living with his teacher, the teacher gave him the experience. And then someone asked him, how can they get the experience? And he said, if you sit down and meditate for a while and you're able to slow the brain down, it will come on by its own self. But then he never went to explain the two levels of mobile and immobile. The immobile state will come on to anyone by sitting down. But then they got to spend long hours and they got to make every attempt to get up from the immobile state to the mobile state. And that's the most important part of it. Because it's very easy to arrive at the immobile state and do nothing. And then you can focus with the intention of living to die, because you've already achieved tranquilization in the immobile state. And yet the real purpose of meditation is awareness of the unified field in a mobile state with the intention of living to live. But we can't make that decision until we're able to understand what we are. You take the Eastern student, he isn't concerned with what he is. He's satisfied to do the genuflections. He's satisfied to be pacified with the agricultural terminology. I guess I'm one of those hard-headed son of a gun who can't take that of God realization. I want to know more, the nitty-gritty of it. So I push for the extreme. Can I get up and walk with it, Guru? Can I go fly in a plane and carry it with me? And then they say, yes, why not? Then I guess I'm going for it. I want to walk with my God realization. I don't want to go sit down in a corner and die. So that's why I pursue it in a different way. Here in the West, we are dealing with objects like this that is already, as Yogananda says, three-quarter description of God in you. The other one-fourth is your personal encounter with the electrons in your skin. But you've already made an attempt to make a lamp, to make your environment more functional and practical to live in. Why not take the other little jump and see the actual electrodes in your skin and then get up and walk with it? Do you see what I'm saying? So that's why I approach meditation in this way, trying to close the gap and not sedate myself. So, if you realize Jesus said this himself, the peace I give, the world don't give. The world gives you 6 feet in the ground and to withdraw and sedate and tranquilize. He gives you the strength of peace, that is to cope with the situation moment to moment. And to do that, you got to get up and move. So, here, in the mobile state, it may be much more intense, but I'd say it's much more rewarding. Because in the end, you got to get up and walk with cosmic awareness. You can't sit down and tranquilize. It's therapy. The fast speed is set for therapy.
Well, the regular speed was set.
Yes, that's set for therapy too.
Okay. What's the difference between the two?
One is for people who are hypo.
So the fast speed will take care of the hypo people.
Right. And the regular will start normalizing both hypo or hypo. But some people who, for instance, let's say, you run into a very hypo person from illness, and they just come to the hospital. They're playing a slow speed or a regular speed would not raise their frequency up enough for them to cope right away. By playing at an extreme hyper speed, they'll make a transition from hypo to norm quicker, but they wouldn't go from hypo to hyper. You follow what I mean? But it will pull them out from the hypo state to the norm state faster than if I play it at the norm state to try to pull them from hypo to norm. So because they're over tranquilized with medicine, and therefore the body is too weak to do it on their own. So to play it at the extremely fast speed, it release the stress of the brain from fixation of words, so they vibrate, and then before you know it, they will make the shift, the endorphins and everything start shifting over, so they would automatically reach the norm quicker and function there instead of staying too long in the hypo state. But they wouldn't go hyper, but it's only for people in that sedated state.
Is it called the flush out?
Yeah, flush out. If a person is traumatized and no drugs have been used, they can go from hypo to norm with the regular music. But if they've been tranquilized in the hospital and coming out, their body isn't fast enough to come up to the regular right away. They need to hear that. So it's mostly for therapy. We use that for people like they had automobile injuries or coming out from surgery. We'd use that for them. We played very fast and then played back to normal. And we've seen results of it already. It pull out quicker.
Adana Lay, June 25th, 1987.
It's good to be back. A lot of new friends and faces, especially loved ones. Most of us have different notions of what a satsang is. And when you literally get down to the action, it's a form of getting to know yourself, what you are, and the association with that part of you. Most of us live in a who instead of a what. And then they find out what they are, it's too late. So many of us who have gone through different forms of illnesses, recover, are able to separate the who's and the what's of their life. And some of us are fortunate to come back and inform others so that they can take heart and understand themselves more. In the ancient days, such a condition existed. A man got sick, might be a wealthy person, nobody could do anything for him. So he finally maybe vowed to go away up in the mountains to live or die. 9 times out of 10, if he does survive, it's the mystery of what he did to recover. And those who come in contact with him would wonder what he did to get there, knowing he had certain illnesses that the prescribed society could not take care of. And what he would offer them is ways and means to get back to the basics of themselves. And over the centuries, many men were like that and women. Didn't have much paper to write on. So they would either describe it on the rocks and leave their knowledge. But usually their knowledge would be communicated in the form of agricultural terminology, because they're evolving through agricultural environmental thinking. Moving westward, most of these ideas are becoming questioned for the first time by those who get sick and want to regain their health by the describing as long as it will work. Then they encounter such information coming from the East. Where do they get their information from? People who have spent time to salvage their lives, come back to live in the work room. So, in our present thinking, satsang, sat being truth, and sang is a fellowship or a gathering, or facing yourself, literally put up a shut up. So that's basic what Jesus would say in his terminology, confess your sins before your fellow men. Since there are no sins, there are only misapplied decisions. Confront your misapplied decisions and see where you went wrong and see if you can't correct them. So in today's thinking, we're making transition from agricultural to technical
and we're freeing ourselves from the guilt syndrome that would be pressured into us over the centuries into looking at the truth of what we are in terms of our existence and trying to cope with it. One scientist said that the future doctor may not offer you any medicine, but he may teach you how to live. And we are moving in that direction. The individual is questioning more and more what is important to life. For example, if we're all lying down dead in this room, and God walks in and says, "Hi, folks, what do you want? Your breath back, the power to perform miracles, or possessions to make you the richest person in the world?" What would you ask for? Your possessions in the world wouldn't do no good if you don't breathe. And all the miracles you could perform ain't gonna do no good if you don't breathe. So literally, what we are is breathing. We may not like it, we may rather admit to it, but when you have to come to grips with it in terms of your life and health, you know. All the illusions of miraculous abilities or possessions don't add up when it comes to the fact that you don't breathe. And this is true, if you have a baby, when it's born, you cut the cord, and if it doesn't breathe on time, doctor can only say the fetus refused to breathe, therefore it didn't live. You can't say it's a human being. So we are pushed more and more in larger quantities to question what we are. And that is the basis of what a satsang is, questioning what we are as a person, and how do we relate to each other in the world. So, over the centuries, they gathered to discuss and find a way in which they can benefit by knowing what they are. So, in this group confrontation, we have three approaches. One, in the traditional way of the East, the teacher or the person who is the model of having clean up his act, he would be the instructor of the means to overcome the problem. And the respect was there with and reverence that was carried on. There's another way, the question and answer way. Because you may have the problem, and the instructor may have the answer. But the instructor can't have the answer if he didn't have the problem. Because that's what will make up the communication, valid or not. When you ask a question, and if he has the answer, either he lived it or he didn't live it. So that's the second way they get together to find themselves. The third way is a combination of the two. You have the experience because you needed to rise above your limitations and to develop your own immunity to cope. And the world is for living. Most of us have the idea about living to die. They will be 50 years or 60 years and they will retire. And then they're going to buy that little plot and go bury themselves when they die. And that is the lifestyle they set up. How many of us are living to live? Then when a man like Jesus or Buddha or any one of the great teachers of truth come into society, they only have one thing to tell us, live to live. And if they decide to go out, they leave us with the most unusual problem about death. Either the body doesn't decompose, or we don't have no evidence they were here. They may leave a piece of cloth to say they were wrong. And it challenges us for approximately 4,000 or 5,000 years now. And we go around developing all types of weaponry to say we are so superior. Yet the very basic thing that is confronting us, we are totally ignorant of it. Won't be too long, we are going to be challenging our own selves as to what is important. Is it living to live or living to die? You know, living to die offers no future. Right? So we might as well start shifting gears and begin to live to live. And if we are looking for negative thoughts or positive thoughts, you can guarantee that living to die is a negative thought. The Eastern teachers, their methods of looking at themselves was more one of withdrawal, simply because the lifestyle was not evolved to warrant active participation in the environment. They didn't have electricity and automobiles to move around, be responsible for a job. Next, they had some company or be in charge of a lot of people, each one of them was trying to cultivate the land. We don't live in that lifestyle as much. We came out of that lifestyle. We are involved in the technical society. So the techniques of pacifying and tranquilizing the body would be okay in the initial stages of your discovery of what you are. But then it will finally be impractical to really give you the truth. Understanding. If Jesus wanted to withdraw from society after he was baptized by John and went to the desert, he wouldn't worry about society, he'd just go off and enjoy himself. And who would get a chance to kneel on a cross? But he was more concerned with living in the world, and so he came back to the world. Buddha was the same. There are a lot of men, women, who have all found their inner consciousness and regained their health, well-being. But they didn't withdraw. it came back into the group. And it's in the world we have to function. Right here, in everything. If you can understand what you're doing and function in it, it would be better. Give an example. Paul was such a man. He used to be a bounty hunter for the Roman government, and he went around looking for unworthy Christians, so to turn them in and get the money. And on his way to a certain place called Damascus, he had an eye-opener. He fell off his horse, and he heard his voice saying, "Saul, Saul, why does thou persecute me?" Whenever you have a born-again Christian, you got one idea now. But he was led by the hand and blind state to the home of a very important person, and he stayed there. And he became a great teacher of truth. He wrote a lot and experienced the Pentecost. But one day he finally realized that the real truth was not there. That was only the outward core of the truth. And the inner truth was more important, and that's how he said to his people at the time, "I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in the Lord." He came to the realization that the miracles and the possessions were not the actual truth. The actual truth is breath. Living and dying daily in God. When he came to this realization, he called that the fruit of the Spirit, the understanding. And he called the miracles the gift of the Spirit, the something to nothing attitude. You know, when you're sick, you want a miracle. Would you pay for it? How many of us cry out to the invisible for something to correct? Well, that's what we go through. But he rebuked even his own self and his own countrymen for that attitude. And he decided to go to work and become a tent maker. And earn his livelihood. Well, then he's a bigger threat to the society, because those in power could not stand a man who would show others how to earn their livelihood and be liberated, not serve no government. So then, because the only government he would respect is what? His breath. And whatever he can do to serve his friends in their needs. So then it was a bigger threat. We come back to ourselves. Are we living to die, or are we going to live to live? Living to live is questioning what you are. It doesn't say it takes away from your professional life. It just updates it and put it into a more effective relationship with your friends around you. The response of another good person and their lifestyle and their whole integrity begins to make more meaningful relationship than the idea that you live to die. But in the early stages of growing up, they teach in the Eastern tradition slowing the brain down in order to regain the health of the body and stimulate the immunity. In an agricultural society, it is okay. A hard day's work, there's no electricity at night, and so you go to bed early. And if you have any candles or wood to burn, fine. The rest of the time you're spending it in darkness, following the sky and the stars. And so that type of tranquilization comes with a sort of relief. Today we have electricity. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We have organized the winter, the summer, the autumn, the spring in this room, the little gadget called a thermometer. So the man in India sits in his cave at those new because it's very hot. The man in China gets up in the morning and does the Tai Chi because it's very cold.
He freezes if he stood out in the cave. That's his particular problem, see? But most people don't know that. So it is over. The guy's doing martial arts. Maybe he's doing the marital martial art. You know the marital martial art? That's why I have to get along with the loved one. You don't beat up the pillow. But in some traditions, if the weather's too hot, there's no way to control it, so they go into the cave and sit down. They calm down. Nine times out of ten, what are they calming themselves down? It's from illnesses of the physical frame or the mind. The cope in the world. As I said, some of them combat other thoughts. They just remain hidden away over tranquilizers. But here in the West, we don't have that much opportunity to withdraw. We're forced to face ourselves right here. So it's a different approach. Nevertheless, the result is the same. The capacity to cope with anything under any circumstances, that's health, that's injury. If the biggest disease today is called acquired immune deficiency, then you know why it's deficient. Because you're not coping with it. You're living to die. But if you're coping with it, then you're going to live. Then you will have acquired immune efficiency. So the efficiency of your immunity determines your survival continuity. You have moments of relaxation, and that's valid. We need it. We also need moments of activity. So an outward activity and an inward calm combination is what we need in this environment. But we don't have to run away into subconscious and do it anymore. You can create your own Himalayas in your house. You turn on the air conditioner. Light up your stove, you make summer, put on your overcoat, and turn on the conditioner and make winter. Some people love to sit in front of fireside. But you have the access, the mechanism, what you're doing with it. If it's going to help you to look at yourself from within yourself. And the result is the capacity to cope. Now, when we go to bed at night, we don't have anything in our brain telling us, I guarantee you're going to wake up tomorrow. Has anything like that spoke to you inside of your head? Last night when you went to bed? Now, consider how many revolutions you went around the sun. There are no years, nobody lived years. There's an erroneous terminology. We live revolutions around the sun. So, out of the many revolutions you lived around the sun, and the many revolutions the Earth is making on its axis every turn, you have that much to come from inside of yourself. And then you ask the question, nothing in my brain tells me I'll wake up tomorrow. I'll go to sleep tonight. It doesn't guarantee if I'll wake up. All I'll do is to tell myself when I'm going to wake up tomorrow. Did you not tell yourself where you want to wake up this morning? Last night? There, great. That's great. You told yourself when you went to bed last night when you're going to wake up this morning, right? And then you lie back and you drift away between a partial dream and then no dream. You do this practically every day. If you count out the amount of revolutions around the sun, you see how many times you've done it. And yet, when we wake up, we get so fired up that we don't even realize what we do. At night, when you go to sleep, you have to tell yourself to wake up in a computer. Now, if you don't wake up, that's going to be the big challenge. And you got no guarantee that you will wake up. But you went to bed last night and you told yourself you're going to wake up. But then let's say you didn't wake up. Something went wrong with that computer. What are you going to do with this beautiful piece of machinery? You called the doctor, but then he said, well, I'm breathing. So. We may bury the body. The question comes up, if there's anything important in that body that may be considered worth salvaging, where did it go? How come it shut down and didn't inform the loved one it's going on a vacation? Then the loved one is traumatized. Yet, we don't have any knowledge that when it's shut down, that it remember where it went after it's shut down. Do you remember where you were when you were sound asleep last night? Do you know if you were a man or a woman when you were sound asleep last night? Now you're sound asleep. You don't know if you're a man or a woman, you don't know where you are, and you don't have the guarantee you're going to wake up. And you don't wake up, where are you now? You can't go tell yourself you're heaven or hell because you don't have the slightest notion where heaven or hell is. You see how we're fooling ourselves a lot as to who we are versus what we are? It makes us very conscious for the first time that we've been fooled or maybe tricked into living for God instead of living for living. And maybe because there is no other approach that we can start the process of living for live other than living to die first, to compare. We have to have something to compare in order to want to do something else. If we didn't have anything to compare with, then living to live would not be a challenge. But living to die automatically shows that it's insufficient. It shows that we have been deprived of a great deal of our
internal energy. Then living to live becomes a more important endeavor or purpose. Not. All around us we've been programmed to have a yearning for religion. But if the person went to sleep last night and don't know if they're a man or woman when they're sound asleep, and they don't wake up this morning, what happens to all that religion they're trained to retain? This can't be shortchanged. We put ourselves out in so much fixation, and then here we have to look at a physical fact about the mechanism that goes on every day. From the day you're born to the day you can come to the confrontation of the fact about your body, what it is, that you do know, you go to bed at night, and you're sound asleep. But before you went to bed, you look at yourself in the mirror, you know you're a man or a woman. When you're sound asleep, you don't. What happened? Yet we live on the borderline of such a nebulous fixation that we will wake up tomorrow. Regardless if you're born in the East or in the West, having a technical society or an agricultural society, the man and the woman, when they go to sleep at night, are faced with a factual confrontation. When they're sound asleep, do they know if they're manageable? And no matter how much I may love you, if when I fall asleep and I don't know who you I am, and I don't wake up, I can't say I cheat you. And you can't say you cheated me. Does the love stop or end in that state? When we're sound asleep, where's the love? Who do we love when we're sound asleep? If we don't even know if we're a man or a woman, then how can we make claims about another person or for another person? Isn't that a tremendous condition to look at in the human body? Yet our intellect, that's the programming system of this beautiful computer made up of elements and works in this material called flesh. If you don't program it, it don't work right. It's like you buy a brand new computer. You plug it in and you don't program it, it will not do anything like that baby. Brand new born, if you don't program it, it's not going to do anything. And that program part is your intellect. How much you store in it, is that what you got to give back? So,
anybody smarter than anybody when they're sound asleep? Is anybody criminal or safe when they're sound asleep? We're all what? Equal. But that equality doesn't have differentiality to say it's male, female, good or bad. Yet something is missing in that equality. And that something is consciousness. Now, consciousness is not intellect. Consciousness is not memory. Consciousness is awareness. That's different experience altogether. When you're sound asleep, are you conscious? Do you remember anything? Do you logically analyze anything? You're breathing all the time, whether it's on the seat, right or wrong. Think of it. And if you take any gas in this environment that will keep this body functioning and conscious, there's only one gas can do it. It's called oxygen, right? They can't give you carbon dioxide. Can't give you nitrogen. Can't give you helium. Can't give you hydrogen. They gotta give you oxygen. That's the question that comes up in the human being in the end. What is important about this mechanism? The breathing. But we take it for granted. We don't understand it. Yet, without it, we can't function. And whenever you get sick, you go to your doctor, he tells you, first thing he's going to measure is your what? Blood pressure, right? And when he measures the blood pressure, he's going to establish it's either going too fast or too slow. Right? You forget it? That's a good idea. Good. If it goes too fast, it causes hyper. And then you have every disease from A to Z in the hyper range. Goes too slow, you call it hypo. Then you have every disease in the hypo range from A to Z. But if you're normal, you wouldn't go to the first place. So disease is what? And then you're at ease with yourself. Do you breathe fast
or slow? Or you breathe normal?
You breathe normal, right? But you know, normal breathing is very boring. Yeah. People who breathe fast are happy because, oh boy, I got it, I'm going for that. I'm going for it. Oh, I can't join your crew, tired. So these are two opposites. Then I go it because one is going for everything, the other one is trying to withdraw for everything. But to be normal, just to get up a walk. And that's the funny part of it. How long can you sit down and be normal without getting bored? I want to do too fast or too slow. Something comes up, you know, you got to do. Yet when you're sound asleep at night, you never question if you're too fast or too slow. You just flop yourself down, close your eyes, and forget the world. If you're lucky, you wake up. I love you. And you have no other. It's hard to say, I love you. Because we are programmed, that's not a nice thing to say to yourself. Isn't that true? But when you look at the facts, who can you really love? You first got to love what you are, and then you can extend it for the next person. You see, the man Jesus, he spoke physics, but the people made a lot of churchianity out of it. The physics he spoke was love God with all of your mind. Now that's a heck of a thing to do. With all of your mind. That means you cannot sleep. And you can't drift off with the nebulous thinking. Because then the love is what? It's mediocre. Incomplete. He said all of your mind. You can't be unconscious. Then it's not possible for us if we sleep last night and didn't know who we are. Right? So how many times we broke the commandment? If we're supposed to follow the commandment, we done broke it. In other words, we knocked to God. We really knock. We all laughed at him. You know, we pay Mr. Reagan income tax. God give us income breath. Keep going to pay the income tax. No breath, no go. Really, pretty rough going when you begin to look at the facts about this. But then he said, the physical fact is love God in all your mind, all of your heart. Now your heart got a pump 24 hours a day, 7 days a week if you're going to do the work. Your strength. That's good breathing. And your soul. Now that's your total dedication to yourself. For years I've searched to find a soul. I couldn't find one because, you know, the funny thing, if I have a soul, it's preposterous to ask my body to save it. But what can this lousy body do to save my soul? My soul may save my body from what? From ignorance. But I certainly can't take my body to save my soul. That is how we have been so over-programmed and never find out what we are. Man is soul. He doesn't have a soul. But man is greater than soul.
man is living soil. No living soil? What is soil? Dirt? Go kill yourself. This total ecology is made up of 144 elements. And this manifestation is a portable model of all the 144 elements. But it breeds constricted living. Therefore it calls it alive. They say it lives. I'm no more alive or dead than you and I if we don't breathe. And that's why I say we're all alive, not dead. God walk in the room and say what you want your breath back. Because a dead body will turn back to about 144 elements. And 144 elements isn't going to go a single place other than sit there waiting for creative intelligence to pull it back together and give it the particular geometry and allow it to breathe again. But when we breathe, that's where a big fat mouth and ego gets moving. Me, man, you, home. We never consider how we came to that. And in the meantime, we're breaking down and our bodies are falling apart. And we live with all type of illusions as to who we are instead of what we are. So the Eastern man finally resolved his anguish by calling it truth. I like to call it the root, you know, the nitty-gritty. When they made me a Swami years ago, my name was Swami Nityananda. I called myself in the end Swami Nitty-Gritty, because I told the Swami, said, I'd rather know the nitty-gritty of the whole thing than to call me a Swami. Even though I can slow my brain down and be in that state, I want to understand it. I'm not interested in philosophy. And then the Swami says, okay, nitty-gritty. But that's it. What am I? And that's more important than who am I. And each one of us has to make that discovery. And the funny part of it is that we do it every night and don't remember. Look around. You'll see that this is the result of the sperm and the ovum. Can't make a human body without the two. No two sperms can make a human body, and no two ovums can make a human body. You need one of each. And a loser cannot be born. You throw all the sperms out and let them race to that ovum, only the winner gets there. So you can be my guest and call yourself a loser after you're born, but I don't know of any loser here in this room. Because the odds of you being born and being a winner is several million to one chance. If you ever saw the journey of the sperm to the ovum, there are millions racing with you. But you sit in this room as a winner. Pretty good. You prove to yourself that you're willing to live to live. But then you can program yourself to live to die. That's your option. After all, you have individuality. You're endowed with individuality. It cannot be taken back from you. And you're allowed to fool yourself. And that's what they call the who in you, not the what in you. And if you take the who into the H-U-E-S, we've sure got lots of hues. Every day we live in different hues. Every second we live in a hue, a different color projection of ourselves. But I don't see a loser in this room. In the world of manifestation, that's the truth. Not the world of man. In the world of manifestation, out of the arm part, four elements, in a manifested state of the universe, involving a polarity as the basis, we are only one model of that polarity, sperm ovum. What we are and why we are becomes more and more important, because the environment is already operating to teach us, and then when we don't learn from it, we may blame others. But there's no one here to blame. You can't blame a winner. You are a winner, so how can you blame another winner? If you can blame the loser, then he isn't here. So then winning involves opportunity. An opportunity is the right to be you. That's individuality. You're unique, but you may not use it, because you may build up every form of sedation technique to pacify your consciousness, and that's what we call living to die. But if you're living to live, the youthfulness that is you, the healthiness that is you, and the integrity that is you emerges as evidence. You don't break down. It's an unusual form of lifestyle. In the church version, they call it immortality, everlasting life, resurrection. I call it longevity lifestyle. Ain't going out of business. You know what's a longevity lifestyle? That's quite a lifestyle. That's just today's version, that you can live with it more easily in your mind without guilt, that you're not worthy to be immortal, or you're not worthy to resurrect. So longevity lifestyle is available to all of us because we're atoms. We are elements. We are endowed with individuality, and we won the race. It's up to us to exercise it. Free men all about it, sir. There is no greater truth than the root cause of what you are as an individual. And it's the only truth. And we are bound to it. That's where the word religion comes. Religiar, to bind, ray, back, bind back. We are bound back as individuals to the root structure of what we are in ourselves. And there's no way to get around it. Fact is, you're bound back to the winningness in you as a winner. And the non-existence. You're bound to that, to the total existence. There's no such thing as non-existence. There's no way to get rid of the 144 elements. But the 144 elements will play many varieties of geometry, and the most unique will be the human body. Now, what is unique about it is this: we can only go visit the other parcels of the 144 elements called planetary systems, but we can't own them, simply because you go to sleep at night and you don't know who you are. If you don't wake up, all the ownership is over. But you can have dominion over it. That means you can learn to work with it, appreciate it. But there's not a single thing here in this universe that these elements can hold. Two things equal to the same thing are themselves equal to what? One another, right? Didn't they just say, you see me? You see the Father? That's what he said. Jesus said that. I and the Father are one. You and the Father are one. He was 144 elements. You're 144 elements. And he's making us conscious that we are immortal already. But we don't recognize it. We don't know how to look at it. So we're motivated with all types of programming only to get let down by ourselves. Nobody lets us down. Any time we're in doubt as to where we're going to be when we pass away out of this body, and if you think you're going to find somebody sitting on the throne in some antiseptic corner of the universe waiting for you to accept them as God, well, you'll be disappointed. Because you can't sit down in an antiseptic corner of the universe and not be everywhere. And if he's everywhere, certainly he's his own devil. So that tells you right here, there is no devil rocking but yourself. And if he's inside of you as a spoken word, then you are God, not a God. We are God, but we are not a God. Hard to accept that we are God, because we're so overprogrammed to be so insignificant that the fact we came out from the elements to work with a chemical body, we feel and we're programmed to be insignificant. That's where we fool ourselves. If we were so insignificant, why would the millions of sperms race to get to the ovum, only one is a winner? Then you can argue with the Creator and say, why would you set up a race like that? And then why would you choose me to win to stay inside me as a big fat mouth that talks to itself? See? I argue with him. You know what he says? You're stuck with your mouth, to live with it now and don't come back here. The world is yours, where do you want to go? So I fell off a building, broke up all my bones, and I couldn't die because of that. There's no place to go other than my broken bones or another body to crawl into to be born again and start all over. So I said to myself, lying up in the ground, well, I ain't familiar with that one. I gotta wait X amount of years to recall my memory, and this broken body that's painful, I'm familiar with that, I'll take it. So I crawled back in this one. Well, who's kissing who? That's the principle. Not who I am. Who I am is totally non-existent. What I am is more important. I am his God, not a God. It's in everything. It's an odd type of consciousness. It doesn't come in the state of sleep. It comes after many years trying to do without sleep. You know, of all the things that Jesus chastise or admonish his students, his disciples, he never criticized them for eating or drinking or doing anything. He criticized them for sleeping, right? Isn't that funny? Why would he criticize them for sleeping? Because that is what we are. We're dealing with a principle of respiration that will shut us down and we become unconscious. And during that moment of unconscious, you don't have a guarantee you will wake up. And he was trying to make his own students realize that it was a very, very tricky state of the consciousness to find in. Now, I don't know if anybody read the book called The Razor's Edge. In that book, the test was the man went up into the mountain and spent the whole night, 24 hours a day, he was born, not to sleep, to see if he could do the other thing. And what he discovered, right up on the mountain, he was freezing because the fire was going out, and all the books he carried to read to keep him awake was of no use to him. So he took the book, lit them, and used it as a fire to keep himself awake for the next morning. And then when he realized that just about dawn, an inrush of air refreshed his entire body, giving him more vitality than he ever had. But he was conscious for the first time of this particular resonance in his mechanism. He got up, looked around, came back down from the mountain. Then the monk who was in charge of the monastery was at his door waiting for him. All that time the monk never could be visited by the man. The man and the monk connected for the first time at a unified level. They both can walk. Now, when you walk the wind, then you don't have to worry what you are. I don't know if you saw Schrodinger on TV. Her last test was to do what? See if she can find out who she is or what she is. She found out what she is, but she panicked by not realizing and by placing an invitation by asking how far she was going out on the wind. And there she starts slipping up. Everyone has to experience it themselves. No one can do it to you. You have to have the experience. That's what Paul called living and dying daily in the Lord. It's right here, what you want. The Eastern people don't have any new knowledge to offer us other than three approaches to arrive this every day. A teacher who has mastered it, or a question and answer program, or the connected relationship. But in the end, you have to experience it for yourself. Because this is a personal experience. We do experience shutdown without our consent. It's called death. How many of us consent to that? Not too many, right? But we experience it without our consent. The breath is taken away from us. And then it's pushed back into us. You know, it's a funny thing about breath. In the womb, the baby can breathe through the nose. Think of that. We live in, and none of us can breathe with our nose inside the womb. And then the cord is cut. That's the first time we breathe with our nose. The air comes into us. And when we quit breathing, the air goes out. The body stops. Yet very few of us can walk the wind. Go out with the breath. That's what consciousness is. And come back in with the breath. It has nothing to do with intellect. Consciousness is that oxygen going in and out of you. It's all knowing and all present. Very funny phenomenon. So they call it spirit, great spirit, great life. It provides every opportunity for life to function. Yet we have to come to grips with it at some point in time. Because without it, we break down. And our health is determined by oxygen. It's not determined by carbon dioxide. One more thing before I let you ask questions. What you are is very unique. It cannot be duplicated. It can only be experienced. And that's the moment when the sperm bonded with the ovum to form you. When you can relive that moment in your physical grave, you can declare that every saint or master or any realized person in this world, the universal truth, I am the Father of one. And you have no more doubts in your mind as to what you are. All the other illusions about what you think you are disappear at that moment. When you can relive that moment and the sperm and the open body perform you. It's called a cosmic ignition. But it's a distant memory locked up in your cells with the DNA and RNA. But I cannot describe it to you what will occur, because this is a personal experience for each one of us. But I can tell you this much. When you experience it, you'll never change place with nobody. Thank you.
Sure.
There's no magic and there's no miracles there. They're all simple laws of nature, but you can't break a law of nature. You only can break yourself against it. There's not a single law in nature you can break. And all our laws are very simple. Magnetism is attraction, repulsion. And there's no boundary line for it. The electron field is the flow of positive and negative charge. Chemical is the crystallization. But the three speeds are based upon this mass moving. If this mass don't move, you don't have the other.
So the three speeds are moving in synchronization?
No.
No?
They're moving in their own momentum of each one. Here is a crystal condition, you are solid. At another speed, you call it jinching.
Okay.
What is jinching?
It's a healing art.
Hmm?
It's a healing art. Holding points. Well, holding points, pressure.
But listen to what you're saying to yourself.
The jumper cable.
Jumper cable.
Keep talking because you're going to find out what you're doing to yourself.
Conduit.
You are. If you don't breathe, you think you can get it?
No.
Then what are you saying now?
You're out of the electrical field.
Yeah.
So, the electrical field is already present with the chemical. As long as you shift the rate of your breathing, you will shift the acceleration. And so it will either go fast or slow.
So if you slow your breathing down very, you know, like if you took one breath in a minute, how what would that do? That would change everything? It changed the chemical, the magnetic, and the electrical?
It does.
Because some yogis certainly do that, don't they, in meditation?
And
they,
so when you go measure them, the devices, you'll find nothing other than what you already know is going to happen. The body reads out. One fast, one slow.
What would your definition of a realized being be?
Did you get the answer?
Yeah. I did. I'd like to hear it in words.
Can you tell us one of the first steps you worked with to transcend sleep pattern? How did you approach it?
Help me cut nails in the sun.
We often believe we will transcend something, and that's where we fool ourselves. We don't transcend sleep. First, you must understand what the sleep represents. Do you understand what sleep represents?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
No.
Escape.
Escape. No.
Replenishment of
Replenishment
of
fear. Fear.
No.
I know the answer to fear of icon.
Yeah, tell me.
The devil.
No.
No?
It could be the devil in us, yes.
It's not death.
Is that due to changing the breathing pattern? Mm-hmm. It's coming through changing the breathing pattern? Get the breathing back in sync?
Loss of consciousness. Loss of conscious pain.
No, there's no loss. Sleep is not a loss of mind.
Change?
No. What is sleep?
Lack of consciousness. Lack of consciousness. Lack of realization.
Awareness.
Lack of
actually you get a lack of consciousness.
You use words and you're stuck with it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is explanation?
If you're 144 elements operating in an organism called tissue, which one of them wants to sleep? Unless you want to tell yourself with your own mouth that you have to sleep. So one of those elements will do what? Or all of them will do what? So who put you to sleep? Thank you. Your own mouth did it to you, and your own saliva will do it to you in the end, because you swallow your enzymes, and then your brain will flow down. And then they say that you're unconscious.
You said sleep had a function. You're asking us what the function of sleep was. You said in order to go past it, you need to understand what the function of it is.
Yes, it has a function.
But you didn't say what the function is.
Of course, you've got to establish what sleep is before you establish the function.
Okay. So sleep is
so you don't establish what sleep is, how are you going to establish the function?
In 2 minutes, I'll be a graphic example.
So sleep is the 144 elements slowing down.
Yeah. Okay. To what level? That's where you have to understand. The scientist will listen to you talk and call it a bunch of baloney, but he will go experiment in the lab and get the measurements. And then he will release all the different states to prove to you what he's talking about.
Well, the changes in the brainwaves.
The brainwave will change by respiration. Otherwise it can't change. It will be the same if the respiration is a certain pitch. And the respiration shift, then the brain wave will shift. Who sleeps when they run?
Who sleeps
when they run?
When they run. Very fast. But who sleeps when they lie down? You have to shift. Velocity.
Then you're shifting all three aspects of consciousness, chemical, electrical, and magnetic. Everything slows down at the same time.
Look, you drive a car, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to go from 45 miles to 70 miles an hour. Do you buy a new engine?
No.
What do you
do? Run the accelerator.
All right. You want to go from 75 to 100, buy a new engine?
My car, yes. Drive an old car.
As long as you don't have to change your engine, the car is built with an accelerator to go from different